All right, friends, Greg Kokel here, and I welcome all of you to Stand to Reason. And thank you so much for being a part of our listening audience, as it were. Although most of you are listening a podcast, some may be listening to the show. It's amazing to me, and I'm really deeply satisfied in a sense that after 30 years of broadcasting, that there's been such a shift from the radio to podcast. And I was asked just this last weekend when I was in Tucson doing an event, which was great, by the way, just being in front of real people doing a real event like we did in reality the weekend before. I was asked by someone, "Are you on the radio?" I said, "Yes, I am." She said, "Well, how can I get your show?" And it's so odd to think of it that way. And I'm on the American Family Radio Network, which is a national a network of stations. But it's 1 hour of the show per week is broadcast. And the thing is, if you can listen to it at the right time on Sunday and you're in a market where they carry the show, then that's great. But you don't have to thread the needle. Just go to str.org and, you know, sign up for the podcast and we'll send you it. You can listen to it at your leisure. And so, I mean, it's such a difference. But what's so great is that you don't have to be in your car at the right time, in the right location, in order to benefit from the show. You can listen as much as you want, as many times as you want. You could forward the show to others. It can be a regular part of your library. That's the wonder of podcasting. And for us, it's a lot less expensive than buying radio time. So I've just watched things change over the year. I am really thrilled that Amy Coney Barrett was approved and installed as our latest Supreme Court justice. You could well imagine that's the case because of my comments of how a justice ought to be measured and weighed as appropriate for the Supreme Court. And I talked in the last couple of broadcasts about what it means to be a conservative politically by contrast to a conservative with regards to the Constitution. And frankly, you could be liberal in your political views and still be a conservative with regards to the Constitution, which all that means is you want to let the Constitution adjudicate existing laws, not have a jurist essentially legislate from the bench. And that's a danger because that is not what the Constitution intended. The legislature should legislate, and the Supreme Court should adjudicate what has been legislated, okay, in light of the Constitution. Now, as it turned out, yesterday is when the vote finally came down, and I just happened to be on my computer. We don't have a TV, or at least not a TV that gets any networks or cable or anything like that. We use it as a screen for our DVD player. And as it turned out, I just thought I'd jump into YouTube for a moment to see what came up. One of the things that came up was the vote. There was, in other words, you could go to YouTube, you can click it, and there it says live. Like right now, they were voting on Amy Barrett as a justice for the Supreme Court. And so I clicked it right when the tally was being announced. And that's when I could see the numbers right there and the announcement was being made right then. Something like 47 nays and 48 nays and 52. That's 50, right? I mean, that's 100, right? My math. Anyway, there was like Derek is looking it up. I think it's 48 versus 52 approval. So the motion carried, essentially. And I just clicked in and hit the button right when that was being announced. And so I got the message immediately in real time and was very happy. I'll tell you something else that happened at the same time. was on the right-hand side was where the comments were able to be made. So people would put a comment in, and you know how that happens. And then it kind of scrolls up, and when a new comment is put in, immediately after the announcement was made, it's up there, 52 to 48, thank you. Immediately after the announcement was made, there were so many people that were putting comments there that it was scrolling up automatically so fast, I could hardly even read it. And I did notice on occasion you had someone that was disgruntled, but most of the time it was yay, yay, yay. And I would say the majority were praising the Lord and thank you, Jesus, and clap, 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 and all of this other stuff. Now, what mystified me, though, in one sense, I know that from a constitutional perspective, what is supposed to happen is that the president chooses or nominates a justice, and then advice and consent comes from the Senate. And what they're supposed to do is to assess not the politics of the jurist, potential jurist for the Supreme Court, but rather their credentials and capability as a jurist on the Supreme Court. And what amazes me, I'm looking at the number right here, that 48 people voted nay. Now, I know that once in a while there's something else going on, but largely these were 48 people that thought that Amy Coney Barrett was not an appropriate justice for the Supreme Court. Or maybe the timing wasn't right, that we should have waited until after the election, but we did wait until after the election, the last one. And the president is the president, and senators are the senators for the full period of time. And so there was nothing untoward about them making this decision here in the 11th hour of the president's term. I'll say quite frankly, it bothered me, the negative votes. The 52 didn't bother me because it appeared, and this is pretty much the universal assessment of Judge Barrett's qualifications are that she's eminently qualified. And on those grounds, there's no good reason to disqualify her with a nay vote. The nay votes were almost entirely political. And it's one thing to play politics in a certain sense within the rules, the constitutional rules. Everybody does that, okay? It's another thing to what seems to me to ignore the constitutional rules and your role under the Constitution in this circumstance and then play politics with a nay vote. And it strikes me that a lot of that was going on. Now, I know why the voters would be politically concerned, and it wasn't because Amy Coney Barrett's politics, her political point of view, which there was some visibility of, was going to be a factor. I do not think that's what the main concern was. And the reason is because of all people, the judicial philosophy of Judge Barrett would represent a violation of her conscience to do something like that. All right. She clerked under Scalia. She's in the spirit of Thomas, etc. She's not going to do that. No, she's human. It doesn't mean their biases can't leak in somewhere, but this is completely against her judicial philosophy, which is precisely the concern, I think, of so many who voted against her for political reasons. That is, that she would adjudicate based on the Constitution. And that means there might have been some decisions in the past that were passed irrespective of the original intent of the writers of the Constitution. In other words, by activist judges. And that she might play a part in overturning those, what I would consider, illicit decisions. And she would consider, probably, in light of the Constitution's intent. And it's the original intent that actually protects us. Now, I covered all that ground in previous shows. I'm not going to go into all that again. I'm just glad for the results, speaking personally right here, and not surprised at how the vote split out. But I think the way it split out tells us something about different philosophies about how jurists should or how Supreme Court justices can be used and abused, I think, politically. All right, so leave it at that. let's see, what else do I have here? Just learned a couple of days ago that, and sadly so, that the Texas Rethink, which was scheduled for February 26th and 27th, has been, let's just call it postponed, which means we're not going to have it this year, but we're having, that is 21, but we'll have it in 22. Now, I'm not completely surprised about that. It's painful to give you the news because we hate to lose an event. But we lost an event in Birmingham in the spring. We lost an event in Southern California, a reality event in Southern California here in the fall. We had a great time in Seattle 2 weekends ago. We are looking forward to our time in Minneapolis in 2.5 weeks. And right now, I think our numbers are a little over 1,100. And the limit is 1,500. That's the limit the state has imposed in light of other concerns. The politics of COVID is the way I like to put it. So that means if you would like to go November 13th and 14th in Minneapolis, we just had our first run 10 days ago in Seattle. It's going to be great. We had a fabulous time there, and I'm looking for the same thing with the same crew coming up in Minneapolis. But you need to sign up soon. And so if you go to realityapologetics.com, realityapologetics, all one word, .com, you can register. And my apologies for those of you who either signed up or are looking forward to signing up in Texas in February. Looks like we're just, you know, we can't control what we can't control. But I will tell you, we are still, we've got tremendous momentum. We planted a flag in the Pacific Northwest last weekend. We were thrilled about that. The group that showed up was fabulous, very energized, as I think explained last week. And, we're moving apace. We're moving forward apace, I guess is the right way to say it. And continuing to take every opportunity that the Lord is giving us. So if you're one of our prayer warriors, just keep that in mind. We want to keep doing these as effectively as possible. And in the areas that we've already opened up and in long term, our sixth and final region that will open up is the roughly the New England area. So that's coming up. Keep in mind, though, we don't have a sponsor for the South anymore. So if you know of a church in Birmingham or Montgomery or Atlanta or even Nashville or thereabouts, that is big enough to manage this. I'm presuming now that the COVID crisis will eventually be in the past for us, and we can then have full-fledged conferences. We still need a home in the South. So we're looking for a church that has top-down commitment. That is that all the major players believe in what we're doing and want to invest in their local community with a project like Reality that will help pass the baton to their young people, to their junior hires and their, that is, middle schoolers and also high schoolers and even college students. And like I always say, we're not checking IDs so everybody can come, but that's our focus, to give high quality, high impact training and teaching from our best communicators to get the young people fired up. And eventually, too, when we move them through, and for some of them, it's just they're crossing the threshold, right? This is just the first their first exposure for this kind of stuff. We want to then begin to funnel them into STRU. That's right, Stand to Reason University. Now, it's not a real university, but it's our kind of intentional educational program where we take our most important topics, and we give a series of classes. Think Khan Academy here, and a student or an adult, for that matter, can go in and start watching the videos and then take the test afterwards and move on to the next one and then get kind of psychologically rewarded with your little star there and then eventually get, you know, well done, good and faithful servant on the course and move on through the courses. And it's kind of our way of, in a certain sense, letting Kokel, like MacArthur's old soldier, just slowly fade away. And because, you know, I am fading a little bit more every year, and I want to get further and further back from center, bring our young guns up front and center, and especially let the internet do the work all over the world, reaching so many more people than I could or any of our public speakers reach in a way that will actually help them and equip them and enable them to be effective for the future in facing the challenging culture that's emerging, raising challenges that, quite frankly, I never faced when I was their age. So this is all part of what we're doing. And we are positioned right now to release the first two courses at the end of the year. And the first course is Ambassadors for Christ, the basic skills, right? And the second course is tactics. No, the second course is Story of Reality. That's kind of foundational. Both of them are foundational. And I think that we're working on Truth is Not Ice Cream. Tim Barnett is doing that one. I did the first two. Then we'll have a tactics version, kind of. We've already filmed that, but we have to kind of, we have post-production work to do on that. So these are all kinds of things that we're doing online. So no matter how long we are kind of stuck behind our computer screens at home, or either by the current circumstances or for other reasons, we are trying to take what we can do for you and make it as easy as possible for you to access it. It's not the same, I get it, as sitting there and listening to an event and being part of the energy of a reality. It's not the same for us as communicators, but it doesn't matter. What we're here to do is to be faithful with the opportunities that God has given us. You have heard me say time and time and time again, bloom where you're planted. Well, Stand to Reason is planted in a certain place right now with all the circumstances we're facing. We want to bloom here. This may be a little less, more arid, less capable of producing fruit because of the circumstances we're facing at the moment. Does not matter. This is where we're planted. These are the circumstances God has given us and given you, and we are going to make the best use out of the opportunities that God has given us. So, okay, keep your eyes open in the next couple months for the launch of STRU. My notes say here it's coming in November. And it looks like we're very close to launching the first two courses. And every student that comes through our reality events, we want to say, okay, this is just a taste. This is just a beginning. Okay, here's where we're going to send you so that you can get more. And of course, it's not just STR. We have links to all kinds of other places, and there are tremendous groups that we work with on a regular basis and we're excited about, and there are areas and groups that you can go to their websites, listen to their blogs or their YouTube channels or whatever it happens to be. There is so much out there to assist you and help you, and I'm telling you something, you're going to need it, all right? You are definitely going to need it because the times, they are a-changing, Bob Dylan there, and faster than I ever thought that they would, and we are here for you, all right? Let's take a quick break, and then we'll get a call, or maybe more, and then we'll see what happens. Greg Kokel, Stand to Reason.
Have you seen our brand new website? Stop by str.org and enjoy a fresh, clean layout with all the same great content. The new Stand to Reason website was designed with you in mind. It has an easier than ever navigation and a crisp, simple layout so you can find all the sound analysis and careful commentary that you've come to expect from us. Browse new features that make finding your favorite resources easier than ever. As always, it's our goal to equip you, our fellow Christians, with a confidence, clear thinking, and courage you need for every encounter you have as a Christian ambassador. Our new website is just one way we're fulfilling that goal, allowing you to access the resources you need in a new and improved way. So visit str.org and keep coming back to discover new podcasts, articles, and videos each and every day.
Would you like a Stand to Reason speaker to speak at your church or event? Greg, Alan, Tim, and our newest apologist, John Noyes, are available, both in person and online. Just email booking@str.org to schedule them today. Our speakers can address a wide array of topics, from bioethics, gender issues, and science, to theology, philosophy, and how to respond to other worldviews, all from a biblical perspective. Whether it's a Sunday sermon, Zoom conference, or YouTube live event, our skilled and engaging speakers can be there, either physically or virtually, with the goal of equipping Christians to effectively influence the culture for Christ. To read their bios and learn more about the topics they cover, visit str.org. Then email booking@str.org to schedule Greg, Alan, Tim, or John today.
And thank you, Darcy, for reminding folks that, of course, our team is available, and we are getting more and more opportunities for live engagements, and as time goes on and things open up more, depending on the state that you're in, the more we'll be able to do live and in person. I've actually done 5 talks in the last couple of months virtual. That is, I stood on a stage where I was filmed and pretended there was an audience when there wasn't. And some people ask me, how could you do this? Because then the film is then sent digitally to whatever location that is hosting the conference that I'm participating in. How could you do that? And I said, after 30 years in radio, I'm used to talking to like nobody. That I can see, at least. Much more fun to be able to see their face, your faces, as it were. But last weekend when I was in Tucson, I went to church there, and on Sunday morning we had free, and my wife and I went to a church that she had gone to 38 years ago. We had a great time, met the pastor, and talked about a possible event in the future with him, and he said, so how far ahead do we have to schedule you, you know? And I will just tell you, so you know, for me personally, and this is true to some, for all of our speakers in some measure, and that is, there's even when we've got a lot of things going in the near future, we still got openings in our schedule, and there are things that we can work out with you, and Darcy will help you with that. But right now, I mean, there's a lot of openness in our schedule, as you can imagine. So it's a great time if you've been thinking about scheduling something, particularly early 2021. Now's the time to lock it down and work it out with Darcy. That's booking@str.org. All right, let's go to the phones. Okay, now I'm trying to remember how to do this. Do I push the middle button? Is that right? The middle button, not the top button. The middle. Most of the time, for the last 6 months, have been broadcasting from my home, and it's a digital thing that I'm. It's different than the TLS I have in front. I'm in the studios right now because I did an interview with William Lane Craig, which will be our next show, as I understand it. Is that right? Or is this? Yes, it'll be our next show. And you'll get to hear that. But we wanted to make sure we had equipment that wouldn't fail us. So here I am in the studio. Now I can't remember how to use our regular equipment. Yeah, so not the red button. Okay. There we go. I think I got, yes, Joel in New York City. Welcome to Stand to Reason. Brother, are you there?
Hello?
Yes. Hello, Joel. Is this Joel? Oh, we're working on it. Well, I have you clicking like...
Hello?
Yes, Joel. It's... keep talking. All right. His button is
hello?
Red. Hello, can you hear me now? I am. Joel?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
It wasn't my fault. It was Derek's fault. Okay, I'm just telling you. Of course, he's not on the air, can't defend himself, but he is acknowledging it, beating his breast, and repenting of his error.
Yeah, you know? I figured I'd give you a heads up, because for some reason, I couldn't hear you the whole intro, or even when you just, like, I heard the commercials, but then I didn't hear anything else. It's been silent the whole time, so I don't know what's going on.
Okay, well, it's fixed, he said. So
okay.
He had you potted down or something, the slides, you know. Okay, my apology, or whatever it was. So, okay, now it's you and me, brother. We made it.
Awesome. So I was just curious to get your thoughts on something. It's a thought that I had in the past. The idea being, like, if we were purely physical and even determined beings, coming from evolution, if it makes sense, like, it doesn't make sense to me that if that was the truth, if that was the case, that we would come up with the idea of a spiritual being like God.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when I think of myths and I think of fiction and, you know, even like, you know, when you talk about leprechauns or you talk about unicorns or whatever, you know, these are all things that are somewhat based in reality, but maybe twisted forms.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
I got to be careful with my words. Of course, I believe God's real, but you get my point. Physical
yes, of
reality.
Course, of course. I mean, there's you could imagine a horse and then put a horn on it, you know, and call that
exactly.
a unicorn, for example, because we know about horses. Yeah.
But where would the idea of a spiritual being, especially like God, come from? And to me, it seems that wouldn't happen. Mm-hmm. And I was just curious if you agreed with that, if you've ever thought of that yourself.
I have not thought about it, but it's an interesting question. It's also interesting, since we're kind of straining at words or being careful about our words here, you said if we are the product of evolution and that a purely physical process like evolution and are determined, would we come up with the idea of a spiritual being? Well, if we were determined, which would be the case if we were purely physical, we wouldn't come up with it if what one means is that they kind of think of it on their own. They have an act of will that reflects on things and conjures up the idea of an immaterial thing, which would have no place and they would have no experience with in a purely physical world, okay? No, they wouldn't conjure it up or they wouldn't think it up in that fashion. If they were determined, it could pop into their minds as a result of prior physical conditions, all right? So in a certain sense, it doesn't make sense for them to be able to come up with it if one thinks about reflection and if that it's a process of reflection that produces it. However, if we are purely physicalistic and everything is determined, there will be no mind for the thoughts to pop up into automatically and deterministically to begin with. There could be no ideas because an idea is not physical. There couldn't be an idea of a spiritual being because you would have no ideas at all in a physical universe. This is one of the to me, one of the deadly flaws of physicalism, because physicalism is an idea, and we debate whether the idea is accurate or not. But if physicalism is true, you can't have ideas because ideas aren't physical. They don't extend in space. They don't have chemical properties. They aren't responsive, it appears, just to the forces of physics and chemistry. It isn't like you have one idea that then changes its shape when you go into a 4G dive in a jet or something like that. You know, these are not physical, and all you have to do is reflect on their characteristics, and you don't know they're not physical. So I understand, in a sense, the point you're coming from, and it's a very interesting thought. If we were purely physical, then why would we be capable of thinking up something that was outside of the physical realm? Fair question. But there wouldn't be any real thinking of a creative sense at all if we were purely physical. There wouldn't be any ideas of any kind. There certainly wouldn't be any rationality in play because the laws of logic aren't physical. And in any event, you wouldn't come to conclusions based on reason. You'd come to conclusions based on determinism. So these are all problems with thinking physicalistically. That is, thinking like the physical world is all that there is. And so your point is a fair one, and a whole bunch of other points that kind of spring off of your point turn out to be inimical to physicalism as a worldview or as a point of view. I remember many years ago when I was on KBRT and doing the show there, and this is in the 90s, Stand to Reason was quite young. I was taking classes on my MA Phil project, and I was really taken with my philosophy of mind class that J.P. Moreland was teaching. And it was the question, is there a mind? I mean, this is the mind-body problem. How do you account, or what's the best way to characterize human beings? I don't know what's going on in the background, Joel, but it's really clickety-clackety. And
Sorry, I'll mute myself. Sorry,
it sounds like you're making lunch. Okay. Is there a mind or not? Is there a soul, I guess, is the big question. And so because I was thinking a lot about this, it seemed like I talked about it on the air, the new things I was learning, and I had people call in. And they said, well, there's no soul. A soul is just an idea. And so I asked him, well, what's an idea? You know, what are the physical qualities of an idea? And then I went, well, that's just a concept. They were trying to find all these ways to get out of the challenge I was offering, but the way they got out of it was substituting another notion that itself wasn't physical, because clearly mental activity is not identical to physical activity. There may be physical things going on at the same time. They may be constantly correlated, but they are simply not the same things because they have different qualities. I'm very thankful for my education at Talbot and the MA in philosophy that I got. I highly commend it. It's a magnificent program, and it has made a huge difference in the way I'm able to deal with issues. But this is one of them that I've especially enjoyed getting more insight on. So I think you're right on there, Joel, with your concern. But there's a whole lot more that's buried inside of your reflection, excuse me, that is hostile to the physicalist point of view.
Yeah, which I, of course, agreed with everything you said. I think I was just maybe for the sake of the hypothetical thinking that, all right, it's still physical, but we still have this whatever you want to call it,
yeah,
consciousness, imagination. Would it be possible for us to come up with a spiritual being in that universe, that world that exists, mm-hmm, like that? It just didn't make sense to me. And it's interesting, and it kind of prompted me to ask or call and see what your thoughts were on this.
Mm-hmm.
I was listening to a podcast this morning talking about Descartes.
Mm-hmm. Descartes,
guess,
right.
And his cosmological argument, he made some point similar to my thought, which is, like, I don't know if I can do it justice, but the idea being that humans couldn't come up with the idea of an infinite being unless an infinite being actually existed, something along those lines.
Oh, uh-huh.
You know, and,
yeah, I don't, I wonder, I'm not, I actually am not familiar with that. I did not know that Descartes had offered a cosmological argument. But I'm wondering how I would respond, because we certainly can reflect on at least potential infinities, like numbers, for example. They are potentially infinite. That is, there is no ending to them. All right, and they go on forever and ever and ever. But I guess a human could be aware of a potential infinite, and or maybe some mathematical concepts that could give them the awareness of the infinite. So I'm not sure if that's all that his argument amounts to, whether it's a good one, and maybe it's
well,
not.
Oh yeah, there's a lot more there. By
there
the
is
way,
a, I was gonna,
that, yeah. Th- there's a whole other piece that I was just given the small piece,
sure,
that I caught that reminded me of my thoughts. So
yeah, well, I was going to quip. Maybe it isn't a good one, and that's why I've never heard of it. I don't know, but
the podcaster is an atheist, and he said it wasn't a good one. But then I'm not quite sure if I can take his word for it,
right,
on that or not.
Well, I think the strongest evidence for, I mean, I like the classical arguments for God's existence. I like the cosmological arguments, like the Kalam cosmological argument. And there's another one, I'll think of his name in a moment, who also offered a different kind of why is something rather than nothing, and everything is either contingent or non-contingent.
Leibniz.
Oh, thank you. Leibniz, that's right. So I think there's merit in those arguments. I think the moral argument is fabulous because everybody knows there's a problem of evil. And there can't be a problem of evil in the way people describe it unless there is a transcendent morality, and there can only be a transcendent moral law if there's a transcendent moral lawmaker. Someone has to ground that for there to be a problem of evil. And so I think the moral law is really good. The design argument is magnificent because things look so thoroughly designed that even skeptics and atheists adopt language of design when they talk about, drum roll, Mother Nature. All right, why do we say that? Why do we say Mother Nature? And because it appears that there's somebody someone behind the curtain kind of pulling the strings. And even Richard Dawkins, is the notable evolutionist Dawkins, says in his book, The Blind Watchmaker, and he starts out with this statement, that the biological world is a complex world that gives the appearance of having been designed for a purpose. And then he goes on to explain in his book that even though it looks that way, that isn't the explanation. It's not design. It's faux design. It's not the watchmaker, but the blind watchmaker, which is the title of his book. So so all three of those arguments, I think are good ones. But I think that now I'm trying to remember the point I was going to make there. One of the most powerful things, apart from those main three arguments, have to do with, I can't remember. I know you're talking about Descartes and infinities. I know what it is now. It is the fact that God has revealed himself. Okay, so, and personally, one of the series of books that had a great influence on me as a young Christian was by Francis Schaeffer. They're available in a single volume now, published by Crossway. But I think it's called the Schaeffer Trilogy. But it's The God Who Is There, Escape from Reason, and I think the initial one was He Is There and He Is Not Silent. He is there and He is not silent. The fact that God himself has revealed himself in very special ways, not just through natural revelation, which allows us to construct the cosmological argument and the moral argument and the teleological or design argument, but the fact that he has spoken into history, and the record of that is in the Bible, or even just through the person of Jesus of Nazareth. I mean, this is a powerful evidence of God's existence, in my view. It's not just that we can speculate, but God has already said, hey, hello, I'm here. You want more information? I can help you with that. And then when we countenance the kind of God that is described in the Bible, in my conviction, what we end up with is a powerful explanation for the way the world actually is. All the things that we see that matter in the world, these can be subsumed under this Christian worldview. It's the best explanation for the way things are, is the way I like to put it. Anyway, Joel, good chatting with you a little bit, okay?
Thank you, Greg. Have a great night.
Okay, all the best to you. Thank you. And let's go for a quick break. And we don't have Andrew on board yet, do we? No. Let's go to break, and then we'll talk to Andrew in Portland. Greg Kokel for Stand to Reason. Hold on.
Did you know Stand to Reason has a YouTube channel? We release a new video each Monday on the topics you care about. Through short, engaging videos, our speakers train you on tactics, offer apologetics tips, answer common theology questions, and address big issues in the world today. Join tens of thousands of other subscribers so you can stay up to date when we release a new video. Just go to youtube.com and search STR videos, all one word, and hit the subscribe button. That's STR videos. Take advantage of this free resource to help you stay informed, encouraged, and equipped as you share your worldview with others.
When you choose to support Stand to Reason with a monthly gift of $10 or more, you become a strategic partner in the work of equipping Christian ambassadors. Your monthly commitment makes you a part of a special group helping STR train Christians to confidently and graciously defend their convictions. Your monthly gift helps us plan and manage STR's resources and provides consistent support to aid our ongoing work. As our thanks for your partnership, we have created some benefits to express our gratitude, like a 10% discount in our online store, access to a private Facebook group, and more. To become a strategic partner, visit str.org/donate. Click How Often Will You Donate and choose Monthly. For personal assistance, you can email Ocean Wilson at ocean@str.org.
Right, Coco, back with you here at Stand to Reason. I was supposed to wait for my cue, and I jumped the gun a little bit there. I am under authority here in the studio, and I stepped out of bounds. All right, let's go back to the calls and callers, actually, more personally. Andrew, Portland, Oregon. Hello, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, Greg, how are you? Doing good.
Good, okay. Hey, did you happen to go to Reality weekend before last? We had a lot of folks in Portland that came up.
Yeah, my wife and I were talking about it, but we decided that timing just didn't work out for us.
Okay, well, we got one coming up next year, right around the same time of the year, like the second weekend of October, so you might want to plan ahead.
Yes, definitely.
Hopefully we'll have a lot more people. We'll be allowed to have a lot more people than we were allowed to have this time around.
That would be amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would love to go.
So what's on your mind, Andrew?
Yeah, so I've been thinking about just the fall, and not necessarily the human fall, the fall of the human race, but the fall of angels.
Uh-huh.
And so they were obviously in the presence of a holy God, yet they fell.
Yeah.
And so they were disobedient in some way.
Right.
So my question is, if we are eventually going to be in the presence of a holy God in heaven, does that mean that we have the possibility of being disobedient as well?
Uh-huh. Well, it's a good question, and my view is no, but that's because our circumstances in heaven will not be the same as the angels. Now, what I'm going to do is just kind of sum up my understanding here. I'm not in a position right kind of to proof text and give you here the chapter and verse on all of this, except for in a more general sense. For one, generally, when you read the very last chapter or two, Revelation 21 and 22, I think, it's very clear that there is no sin in heaven, nor will there ever be. Okay? So, yeah, 21 and 22. It is a perfect environment, and all of that ugliness is past and will never recur again. So the fact of there being no sin in heaven, I think, is clear in Scripture, okay? And there is no, even if angels were created as morally innocent, that doesn't mean they couldn't disobey. Because Adam was in the same place. He was born morally innocent, without taint of sin. But it was possible for him to sin. Posse peccari is the condition in Latin, the fancy schmancy theologians say. So I toss my Latin out every once in a while, like et tu, Brute. And, you know, and then I sound educated. Impressive, Derek. Anyway, posse peccari, that means it's possible to sin, which I probably just did a moment ago. And the angels were created in, as I understand it, in the same way. They were morally innocent, but it was possible for them to sin, for evil to be found within them as an act of their will. all right? And this resulted in the fall of a portion of the angelic realm, which looks like about one-third, and that's from the book of Revelation somewhere. Then human beings, of course, when the two human beings, which is all of them, fell, then all of those that were created, the progeny, since Adam and Eve reproduced after their own kind, they reproduced a race of fallen individuals. When we go to heaven, first of all, we are going to be transformed. The mortal will take on immortality, the perishable, the imperishable, and we shall be changed, 1 Corinthians 15. And the nature of that change is going to be a factor in the reality of no sin in heaven. I'm trying to find the best way to put this, okay? That there will be no sin in heaven is pretty much agreed upon across the board. Why there will be no sin in heaven is there's a difference. And the basic question is, okay, no sin in heaven, got it. Does that mean there can't be any sin in heaven or there won't be any sin in heaven? The can't be is the point of view that circumstances will be such that it will be impossible to sin. And the won't be is that circumstances are such that it would be possible to sin, but humans will not choose to do so. And I think this is Clay Jones's view, late of Talbot or Biola, and he's written a book on the problem of evil. And in that, I think his point is we know better now, having lived in a fallen world, not to do that. I don't want to misrepresent Clay, but I think that's his point of view. We, in a certain sense, we could, but we won't. Okay? And that's not my view. I don't think we will because we won't be able to. And the reason we won't be able to is the same reason that God will not be able to sin. It isn't because he knows better. He's just not going to choose something dumb. It's because he is good through and through, and there is nothing that he could want to do or choose to do that would be immoral. Since his nature is moral, he's good at the core. He's the epitome of virtue and excellence. He's infinitely good. He's the perfection of all good. There's different ways to characterize it. Then it is not even possible for God to do evil. It's not in his nature to do so. So God can do whatever he wants, but everything he wants will be morally appropriate. All right? Mm-hmm. And it's not because of his power that he gets to make the rules. It's because of his native goodness. Now, I think, and I'm not alone in this, this is an odd point of view, I think that he is going to share that native goodness with us in the resurrection. I think that we are going to become partakers of the divine nature after a fashion. Peter talks about this a little bit in another text, maybe in Paul, 1 Corinthians 13, maybe, when we see him, we will be like him, because we will see him as he is. And there may be more scriptural support for this. That's where I was saying I can't give you all the chapter and verse. But that when we are transformed in the resurrection, our natures are changed so that all that we desire will be only the good all the time. And we will not desire any good, and we will not be tricked into any bad. We will be made immutably good. Now, some Christians disagree with this. I actually haven't asked Bill Craig about this. I just interviewed him a couple of hours ago, and you'll hear that interview in the next segment. But I think he is concerned that if we claim that there's a change to immutable goodness, then that means we are going to share a quality or a characteristic that is possessed by God alone. And the way I would want to characterize it is native goodness is possessed by God alone. Native moral perfection is. But that might be a communicable attribute that is something he can share with us. And I don't see why that isn't the case. It wouldn't make us little gods. It would just make us good, immutably good. And that's a good thing, because I don't want to have any possibility of screwing things up. Because if I'm given the chance, I'll probably do it.
No, that's great. I love that answer. Just the idea of our previous sin nature being completely overtaken and completely transformed, so that even the possibility of you know, a fall or a disobedience, it can't even compute in the kingdom of heaven.
Yes, and I don't know how anything less than that can ensure the purity of heaven forever. I mean, look at Adam and Eve were innocent. We could be returned to our stage of innocence like Adam and Eve were innocent, but they were not immutably so. They weren't innocent, nor the angels before the fall, in their natures. Now, some have suggested that the angels that did not rebel were also made immutably good by God. I don't know what the scriptural justification for that is. I don't have any problem with that. This is kind of what I recall being taught, but I don't know the justification. But when it comes to humankind, I mean, innocent humans chose badly in the garden. If we are merely innocent humans, then I don't know what protects us. And now, like Clay and others might argue, well, we know better. We experienced a bad world, and we will never make that decision again. By the way, that doesn't account then children who, at least on my take and many others, that are born without active sin in their life, even though they were born in a state of sin because of Adam. Those children that are brought to heaven, that go to heaven by the grace of God before the age of accountability, they die before the age of accountability.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
right.
Well, on the view that we could sin but won't because now we know better, how is it that children know better? They haven't experienced enough life to see the awfulness of sin. I don't know why that would secure anything. It's clear that there will be no sin. That's pretty evident, like I said at the beginning, from Revelations 21 and 22. But why is that the case? Oh, we know better? I don't know. I don't trust that, frankly, for myself. I just don't think that's an adequate explanation.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great, Greg. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. Hope to see you next year in Portland, Oregon. Not in Portland, in Seattle, rather. You're in Portland, but you will be in Seattle when you go to reality there.
Yes.
All right, buddy.
Sounds good. I'll see you there.
Okay, bye-bye now. And when I think about heaven, friends, there's something inside of me breathes a sigh of relief. And it's not just that I'm there and I made it or something. By the grace of God, please make no... be not confused about this. If I going to heaven is an act of grace, it is not an act of merit, not my merit, but Jesus' merit. But when I think about this, and I wrote about this a bit in The Story of Reality, I don't think about streets of gold and walls made in gemstones and mansions in the sky and these ways that the book of Revelation talks about it. I'm not speaking disparagingly of that. I think that what a writer has to do is he's got to use imagery that makes sense to a reader, especially the reader of the time, to try to capture something that is beyond description. And I think in many ways this is beyond description. What I think is the psychological benefits or subjectivistic benefits, not the streets of gold, but rather not being tainted by sin, being washed, being perfectly clean. And this is one of the things I talked about in the last chapter there. And Perfect Mercy, I think, was the title of it. I think about being perfectly clean. And we have never had an experience like that. Even when we're forgiven, we know we're not clean. Even though we are cleansed forensically before God through Christ, we know that in our subjective experience, we still trod the dirty soil of a sinful world, and that clings to our bodies, and we know it. And we can focus on what has been done for us to cleanse us, and that's where our focus should be, not on our sinfulness, in my view at least. But even so, we are aware of this, and so it drags us down, and it causes us to turn to the mercy of God more aggressively and be thankful for the intercession that Jesus constantly makes on our behalf. But still, we know we're dirty. We're soiled. And in heaven, we will not have that awareness because we will not be soiled any longer. We will be completely cleansed and soil-free in such a way such as never to be soiled again. And when I think of that, wow. It's like we can let our guard down. We don't have to worry about that. And there's a whole bunch of other things about heaven that gives me the same sense, this relief. I don't have to worry about anything anymore. I am safe. I will be completely safe. I'll be safe from others. I will be safe from myself. I will be safe from the environment because none of those will present a threat to me because of the resurrection. That's something to look forward to. And a good note to end on. Greg Kokel here at Stand to Reason. Give them heaven. Bye-bye now.